The following message was recorded at the 2011 No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. And now, our featured presentation.
I've been on staff 10 years here at Elmbrook, and prior to that I had an 18-year business career. And my role is what we call community engagement, or I tease and say I've got the job of kicking everybody out of this church, meaning helping people find ways to connect and serve out in the community. And originally from Texas, go Pack, go. I gave up on the Cowboys and I got rid of Tom Landry and Roger Staubach. So that was a long time ago. I can remember one of the pivotal communication moments in my marriage. We'd been married a few years. I was in my corporate life, and I had learned by this time, and I traveled about 75% of the time, and I had learned by this point that Elizabeth always wanted me to check in at the end of the day and just hear how I was and what was going on.
Hear how I was.
Oh, yeah. And so I was going to do what I'd learned to do, so I called her up. I was in Baltimore, Maryland, and I said, "Hi, Elizabeth, and how's it going?" And she said, "Really great," and I could hear it, uh-oh. And I said, "Oh, really? What's wrong?" She said, "I feel terrible. I feel sick. I just have been eating this crust of the peanut butter sandwiches from the boys," because we had three boys, and she was pregnant with the fourth one, and they were all under the age of six. And so as I am off traveling around the
country, that'll do it. That's pretty much. That'll do
and,
it.
And she's saying how sick she feels from whatever. And I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." I said, "I know exactly how you feel." And you say, "Now, how long was this guy married?"
Don't ever say that.
And
it won't
she
go
said,
well for you.
And she said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "You care to explain?" I said, "Well," I said, "you know," I said, "I know how you feel." I said, "You know, I was out with customers tonight, and we went to this restaurant, and I ordered this lobster stuffed with crab meat, and it had this white sauce on it, and oh, I ate so much of it. I feel so bloated. I'm kind of sick in my stomach too."
Yeah.
It wasn't a good story, but I could, you know, because I had learned by this point I need to empathize with her, and it was not good. But that was one of my first communication stories. I said, "Oh man, have I got a lot to learn in this process."
And you would think we would have been okay at this because we were married 7 years before we had children. I had a career and Mike had a career, and then we had all these children, and we've moved around a bit. They are now four teenage boys. I'm almost the shortest person in our household. They are 19, 18, 15, and 13. And Mike is my full-time job, and they are my second full-time job. And then I am a Christian public speaker, so I travel around speaking to all different kinds of groups. And I can honestly tell you, I've never spoken to a group like you. So this is a first. But one of the things we discovered is we told stories to each other and we talked about communication. There's three assumptions that are confirmed by research on this issue of communication. And the first one is that all couples have problems. Emphasis on all. It doesn't matter how old you are, how young you are, how long you've been married, which marriage it is.
Oh, let me mention, dear, these sheets that you've got. Oh, yeah. We're going to be kind of talking off of the gold sheet.
Yeah.
And the blue sheet, I'll tell you what that is at the end. So if you're wanting to doodle on something or look at where we're going, we're using the gold-colored piece of paper to talk through.
Money, no money, job, no job, kids, no kids, all couples have problems in this area of communication. And the ones who most successfully they're most effective at problem solving, they work together as a team. We know your wife is not here, so we're talking to you. We talk to the women's groups sometimes together, and Mike very clearly says to them, "Your husband is not here, we're talking to you." This is not about going home and telling her what she needs to do, and we say that to the women also. So, work together as a team. We have something for you at the end that'll help you do that. Most couples rush to find quick solutions, and in their haste, they do not take into account the real concerns of each partner, and thus they fail to produce lasting solutions. I'll translate that for you. Most husbands rush their wives to quick solutions. And as a result, you don't get anywhere because you don't get to the heart of the matter. three assumptions on this issue of communication. It's important to remember communication is an art and not a science. It's not something that is simply achieved. It also begins with recognizing that you and I have to approach this subject with a solid grounding based on Scripture. And that's why we called this first part primal truths. Primal means first, original, of first importance, fundamental. The Bible is the best tool when it comes to communication.
It is not our intent to kind of try to stand up here and try to be quasi-marriage counselors or some kind of psychologist or something like that. But all of us, as disciples of Jesus, what we need to always go back to in all things in our communication is back to Scripture. And I just put a couple passages on here just to kind of, for you in your own quiet time, to reflect on these passages, because these passages, I think, need to be at the root of how we approach our communication before we open our mouth, one, or we have that engagement with our wife in there. This John 13 passage you're probably familiar with, where Jesus is washing the feet of his disciples. This is Jesus' model for marriage, and it is about being a servant. We need, before I start our communication, approach our wives and our communication with a servant attitude. That could be huge right then and there. This Colossians passage about on a daily basis, just as you wake up every day and get dressed and put on a shirt and pants and shoes, we need to, on a daily basis, very intentionally putting on this thing of humility and gentleness of how we speak. This James 1:19 passage about reminding us to be quick to listen, to slow to speak, slow to become angry. My friend Scott has said to me oftentimes when I get ready to get worked up about some kind of communication issue, he said, ask yourself this question before you say a word. Is this something I want to say or something that needs to be said? That really does stop me in my tracks way too often. Is this something I just want to say because they need to hear it? Or is it something that needs to be said? It really changes things. And that last passage, it says 1 Peter 3:17. It's really 3:7. And I found this, when I first came across this verse, it really struck me that here it is, my relationship, my interaction with my wife has an impact on my prayer life. How many of us said, you know what, my prayer life, it's dry, you know what, maybe we need to step back and just say, what's my relationship like with my wife? Because I think if we're not connecting with our wife, it makes it difficult for us to connect with God. So it starts with this whole thing here of we got to look at what Scripture speaks to us and get that right before we go into this whole thing. Because it's not about techniques and about just having the right knowledge on these things, but it really starts at a much deeper level.
The next thing we're going to talk to you about is personal truths. You know, there's a lot we've learned in 26 years of marriage. One of them is, what you say is not always what is heard. And as we were discussing this, we were remembering this funny story about when we were newlyweds. We both worked a lot of hours. And on Fridays, we would always talk late in the afternoon on the phone and make our plans for the weekend. And some people at my office had been talking about this movie they'd seen and how funny and fun and kind of crazy it was. And I thought, oh, that sounds like a pretty good movie. So Mike called me and said, what do you want to do tonight? And I said, oh, let's go to the movies. And he said, okay, what do you want to see? Well, the name of the movie that they were talking about was called Something Wild. So, very innocently, I said, how about Something Wild? And there's this dead silence on the other end of the phone. And then all of a sudden Mike goes, oh, what'd you have in mind? And I thought, wait a minute.
The movie was such a letdown.
What you say is not always what is heard. Some other things I've learned, and we were laughing about this because Mike had, this was his truths, and we learned in the first seminar that you really don't care about his truths, so we crossed those out.
Yeah, all my truths have been tossed.
Deleted.
If you want to hear my truths, you got to go hear the things because they're really not truths. They're Mike Murphy's habits.
Yes,
and you know what? I think we all have communication habits that we need to maybe acknowledge and recognize that they're habits and maybe they're not truths after all. But I think it's real important, and I think for some men maybe of showing up today and saying, you know, what are those women thinking about anyway? Why can't they get this right? So Elizabeth,
may I help you with that? Research has shown, regardless of what your work is, the status of a man's world is determined by the status of his work. That doesn't matter how old or how young. All those same parameters we said earlier. A man's, the status of a man's world has more to do with the status of his work than anything else. If things are going well at work, you can handle waves other places. For women, regardless of what they do for a living, how significant their work hours are, how hard charging their career, none of those things. The status of a woman's world is dependent upon the status of her relationships. And you are her number one earthly relationship. So if things are out of sync between us, nothing is right in my world. Nothing. And one of his habits is to not tell me, because he doesn't want to bother me, with little things that are bothering him. So there's a chair in the corner of our living room, and he sits in that chair and doesn't say a word with his mouth. But he has an extra mouth on his face, and it's right here between his eyebrows. And it's knit together when things are not going well. And what I hear him say with this extra mouth is something is wrong. And my default is it has to do with me. Men and women care equally about their marriage. Men are just as caring and concerned as about their marriage as women are. It's just that your world is defined by work and her world is defined by relationships. I find myself constantly asking him, are you okay? Are we okay? Everything okay? Because I need to know what is the status of our relationship. And he can sit in that chair and knit his brow together over things like, and this is his way, the oil needed to be changed 20 miles ago and it hasn't been done. And I'm thinking we are in major trouble. And it's all about the oil change. Or it could be something big. It could be a bill that needs to be paid. It could be a crisis at work. It could be any number of things. But I always default to it's my fault. Something is wrong between us. So she cannot read your mind. And whether you say a word, your body language, your attitude, everything about you is screaming. And she's trying to figure out, what are you saying? If he would just say to me, the oil needed to be changed 20 miles ago, I just zip my lip, don't respond, and leave the room and feel better.
And I think I'm such a world-class poker player.
Yeah.
She can't read a word of what kind of cards I'm holding here, you know. I get killed because she can read exactly what's on my face.
Whatever it is, if it's a small thing, tell her it's a small thing and she'll be relieved it wasn't bigger. If it's a big thing, tell her the big thing and she'll still be relieved it wasn't bigger. Because she's thinking the worst. That's how women think. The second thing, distractions are not always intended to be personal, but they become personal when they get in the way of communication. Do you see this thing right here on his hip? Turn this way, please. Model. This man is a Texan, and he carries his phone in a holster. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a gun. And nothing kills the communication faster between us than this little thing right here. And I hate this thing. Because it's the mistress between he and I. He can be reading his Bible on the iPhone. Which, if I walked in the room and he had his Bible open on his lap, I'd be fine with that. If I walk in the room, even though he's reading his Bible, if it's on that phone, I hate it. Freaks me out. It's between me and him. It's between us. There's always someone needing him more than me, and that telephone is evidence that somebody else might be more important than I am. And here's what we've had these many discussions over this, and he's removed it from his hip and set it on the table right next to him, but I'll show you what happens. Just in case somebody might call, I need to hear it, even if it's on vibrator silent. And the only way, I take it very personally. If that phone is even nearby, I need him to put it in the other room if we're going to really have a good conversation. His computer that he sits with in his lap used to have the screen up, and he'd say, okay, I'd say, are you going to do that or are you going to listen to me? Are we going to talk about this? And he'd say, oh, I'm listening. But the whole time he's doing this.
I tried telling her, I said, I have this unique gift. I can multitask. Yeah. So keep talking. I'm listening to you.
Yeah.
Keep talking.
The seven habits of a highly ineffective communicator. And I'd say, close the screen. But you know what? It's a mistress. He closed the screen. It's still touching him. It's still distracting him from me. I need his attention. Put the computer in the other room. He had to fill something out that asked him what his office hours were. And I read that and I went, office hours? What office hours? Here's office hours. Your computer is office hours. We've lost all our boundaries. And distractions become very personal when they get in the way of communication. Timeouts are a good thing, not just for children. You know, when kids are behaving badly, a lot of times it has to do with the fact that they're tired or they're hungry or who knows what, and they have a little fit. And the best way to stop the fit is to distract them and to give them a timeout. And the same thing is true when you're trying to have a conversation. There's all kinds of stuff that goes on in his world every day and all kinds of stuff that goes on in mine that we know nothing about. And then we try to enter into a conversation, and regardless of the topic, it can be as simple as what's for dinner or as complicated as our college freshman has called us and there's a problem. Nothing is going to go well. We need a timeout. We need to say, can we call a pause here and get back to this later on? The next one, the why matters. The why matters. Mike would say to me on Monday morning, he's very focused. 6 o'clock Monday morning, he'd say, could you balance the checkbook? I'd say, sure. 7:05 Monday morning, have you balanced the checkbook? 8:32 Monday morning, while I'm trying to get in the shower and get to work, have you balanced the checkbook? Calls me at the office, have you balanced the checkbook? I'm trying to fix dinner, have you balanced the checkbook? Very focused, which is
another gift. It's a gift.
Yeah, it's a gift. It's a gift that your wife would gladly return to sender. It's not that she doesn't want to balance the checkbook. It's the why matters. He would say to me, can you balance the checkbook this week? Sounds pretty specific, right? Unless you're me, and that means you think by 11:59 on Friday night, you have to have the checkbook balanced, and you're going to start at 11:30. All week long, he is distracted by all different kinds of things because he's worried about the checkbook. I'm thinking, I'm fine. I got 3 more days. And he's distracted. The why matters. If he said to me, could you balance the checkbook by the end of the day today because I'm worried about such and such, I think there might be a mistake and we need to solve this. 2 answers on my part. Either yes, I can. I have the time to do that. Yes, I can. Or if you need it done by 5 o'clock today, you're going to have to do it. I can't get it done by 5 o'clock today. And he'll say, okay, I'll do it. Can you see what a difference it makes when you understand the why? Sometimes I say, I need the house vacuumed. And his answer is, okay, I'll put it on my list. That doesn't go well for me. It does not go well for me because I can't concentrate on moving on to the next task because there is so much dog hair on the floor. I need the carpet vacuumed now so I can pull the clean clothes out of the dryer and put them on the floor to fold them. There's a reason why I'm asking what I'm asking. The why matters. Don't just stop there. Now, and the last one, it breaks my heart when I ask a woman to tell me about her husband and the first thing she says is he's a really great dad. Because you know what? You were a husband. You are a husband, whether you have children or not. And if I started to say you were a husband before you had children, but things are so different now, that statement doesn't always apply. But being a husband to your wife is more important. Being a good husband to your wife is more important than being a good father to your children. When she tells me he's a good dad, I hear in her voice an unmet need. An unmet need that says, she should start with, he's a great husband. If she doesn't, you need to find out why. If someone asks her, tell me about your husband, and you're within earshot, and she says, well, he's a really great dad, a good way to follow that up might be to say, well, I better be careful. A good way to follow that up might be to say, well, what kind of husband am I? Put your bulletproof vest on before you ask that question. You might not be happy with the answers, but it's a place to start. You will never be a better father to your children than you are husband to your wife, and vice versa. Those children are going to grow up and leave. Ours are growing up and leaving. And you're going to look at each other and call each other mommy and daddy. And that will not get you through the next 25 years. A good dad is very important, but not at the expense, not at the expense of being a good husband.
You know, one of the things, too, with these on this communication side of things, you can talk about all this stuff, but there are some deal breakers, some things that are going to kill your communication. And maybe today in coming for this, I don't know what your expectations were of coming for this, other than maybe your wife looked at the schedule and said, you need to go to this one, and I want you to tell me what you learned when you get home. I doubt if that really happened, but the thing I would tell you, maybe it starts with recognizing and naming an elephant in the room. And that is, maybe there are some practices that you need to own, or some things that you've done in your communication that you need to, one, confess to God and confess to your wife and say, I'm sorry. And what are some of those things maybe to say I'm sorry about? And that is, maybe you are notorious for just giving her the silent treatment. And you've maybe rationalized that, oh, I'm being this real man of, you know, being this great Christian guy because I'm not going to speak in anger to her. You don't have to. You've already said it by just your face and your body language. So maybe the silent treatment, it's time to open up and quit saying, I'm just introverted. I can't talk. Or my family's like this. We don't talk about these things. Weak. Can't do that. So the silent treatment. Minimizing. Always, oh, it's not that bad. It's not that big of an issue. Oh, don't worry about it. Get over it. Minimizing the situation. When she brings something to you, oh, don't worry. It'll pass. That's a killer.
Don't feel that way. That would be minimizing. Don't feel that way. As if she can deny her feelings.
Yeah. Threats. For some in this room, maybe it's threatening to quit. I'm so sick of this. Maybe I'm just going to get out of here. I've had enough of this. What's the use? Threatening to quit or to leave. Having an attitude of winning at all costs. Some of us are very competitive. And, oh, man, when this comes up, bring it on. I'm ready to let the games begin because I can go with toe-to-toe and I can debate and I can do, and I'm going to win. And you know what? You might win the battle, but I promise you will lose the war. And so maybe it's about quit trying to always be right, quit trying to always win and to show that you've got it down. Another one that is a killer in our communication among men is breaking trust. And for some of us, we need to maybe shut up and quit telling all the guys in our small group, and we put it under the guise of, I need you to pray for my wife because she is really just not getting this thing. Or pray for me because of the burden I bear with my wife. We just can't get it. You know, maybe you share with a brother, or maybe it's with your dad or a family member or your mom. If you are, some of this communication, it needs between you and your wife, and quit airing out your laundry for everybody that you know on some of these communication issues.
If you're not saying it to her, you shouldn't be saying it about her. And that applies to every relationship in your life. That's the principle of gossip. If you're not saying it to them, you don't need to be saying it about them. And it's easy to put that off into other situations, but it applies in your marriage too.
Another communication killer that we need to stop doing and we got to get rid of is just always labeling everything as it's a male or a female thing. The books are out there, the talks, the speeches on this. I think it is somewhat of a cop-out for guys. Well, that's just the way men are, and this is just the way women are. First, we all know they're different, duh. But you know what? The point of the matter is we cannot just cop out and just try to label it. Well, in essence, I can't help it. That's just the way God made me, and men are just this way. We need to quit labeling things as just a male-female thing, implying that I'm not responsible for some of these things. Go ahead.
The thing about the male-female thing, it's a great explanation for why we're different and how different we actually are. It is not an excuse for bad behavior. He doesn't give male-female instructions. He says husbands treat your wives and wives treat your husbands in the same way. It's an explanation, but it is not an excuse.
The last killer I think for some of us we need to repent of or confess and say we're sorry for is maybe we fight dirty. And that is, we use low blows. We take shots at our wives, in essence, things that imply that she's inadequate. Say, you know what, clean this house up sometime. Or, you know what, in essence, accuse her of not being a good mom in a roundabout way, implication, because your wife can connect the dots on this. So maybe we have been fighting and taking low blows in there, implying that she's just can't measure up. And so those are some killers. If we have those killers, you gotta name them and you gotta say you're sorry and get them out of the equation. Otherwise, you really are pushing a rope up a hill on this whole thing. And it just isn't going to work. It's not going to work.
You know, you won't ever put these to rest in this lifetime because they're all rooted in sin. And we will not be free of sin on this earth. But you can become really aware of them, and there's things you can do. What we've done to kind of move past, because some of these were things we were doing to each other too, and still do from time to time. But how we've worked at making it better, putting some of them to rest. The first one is, how many of you have read The Five Love Languages? Every person in this room should be raising their hand. Every person in this room. It's an important book, and I'll tell you why from a men's point of view. I know you want to be productive and efficient in every area of your life. If you want to love your wife productively and efficiently, find out what her love language is. You will waste so much time and energy trying to speak love to her, and it's like she has earplugs in, and she cannot hear a thing you're saying. And it's exhausting to keep trying and trying and trying and meet no success. We learned each other's love languages, and we work real hard at speaking those to one another. And it's efficient, and it's productive, and it's terrific. So speaking each other's love language. The second thing for us was carving out time. It's been different at different phases of life. Right now, it happens to be the early mornings. We have coffee together. We sit in the same room without the phone or the computer. We still have the newspaper, but we're getting there. But there's coffee, and we talk. And we talk about things like what's coming up, but we also talk about deeper things. So love languages, carving out time. And the third thing is how you talk. Used to be our morning conversations or whatever time of day they happened would begin with things like, it bugs me when you. Well, I can admit I am not highly motivated by what bugs him. And he is not highly motivated by what bugs me. But if he can say to me, it makes me feel this when you do this, the whole subject has changed. And it becomes about how I make him feel when I do certain things, and vice versa. So if you can talk in terms of when you do this and when you do that and always and never and things like that, it's a killer. But when you can change the subject and make it not about the thing but about how the thing makes you feel, it changes the way you talk to one another. That's partly how we have moved on past some of those killers.
Let me mention that third point on your outline, the practical side. And we were talking about these conversations that we have when we sit and we just talk with one another in the morning. And here's the thing I want to propose to you and suggest is that there are, within a relationship, there's four kinds of talking that goes on between a husband and a wife. And here are the four areas that you can see on your list. There's this casual talking, and this is the kind where you're just talking about the to-do list. Okay, who's going to do this? I'm going to do that. Where you're just kind of just checking off the just day-to-day living kind of stuff. Second kind of conversation that goes on in a couple is the conflict type, which is where you're just at odds with each other and you're working through the stresses of this and that, and that goes on from time to time. Those last two, the connection and the caring, when you think about it and when you look, as it says on your outline, these are the two types of conversation that existed between you and your wife when y'all were dating. This is part of the reason why the two of you said, this is who I want to marry. The conversations that we have, how we connect, how we listen to one another. And here's the point. If I were to say to you, how does that look today? If you were to draw a pie and you slice those and you cut those slices up, well, how big would each of those slices be? Maybe the caring and the connection, maybe those have turned into slivers in your marriage. So maybe to stop and to take inventory, what kind of conversation, what kind of talking goes on between the two of us? And maybe it's say, you know, I got to change this. I got to almost kind of like diversify my portfolio of talking. And I got to get some other things going on in here because it has denigrated down to just talking about the nitty-gritty day-to-day stuff. And then when we have stresses come up and then we bicker about those kinds of things.
You know, one way you can start with that, if you have no idea how to divide up that pie chart, here's a suggestion for you. If most of the conversations you have involve an electronic device, like a phone or texting or email, chances are pretty good you're not spending a lot of time in connection or caring. You can start things with an email and a text, but you can't finish them. You can't finish them. Connection and caring, those two types of talking happen face to face. And in this ships passing in the night world we live in, it is so easy to go an entire week, truly an entire week, and have talked a lot to your children and maybe a lot about your children, but what about the two of you? What about the two of you? We spent some time with a couple that are a pastor couple that have really worked hard at marriage, and they know a lot about it, and they've studied it. And we said to them, what advice would you give us at this 26-year point? And very interestingly, they said to us, be curious about each other. Isn't that why you wanted to get to know your wife? You were curious. Who is she? How do I get to know her? What is she like? Will she like me? What does she love to do? What does she like to eat? What's her favorite color? Curious. When you meet each other, you expand your relationship toward the goal of marriage. But just because you're married doesn't mean you should stop expanding your relationship, and it doesn't mean you should stop being curious about one another. And that can't happen if you don't spend any time in connection and in caring. Now, the next part of this, there's two definitions we need to give you. We think of event in terms of the Super Bowl, Christmas, birthday. We think of those things as events. But for the purposes of this, what we're going to talk to you about next, an event is the day-to-day happenings in a couple's life. Mowing the lawn is an event. Doing laundry is an event. Balancing the checkbook is an event. Changing the oil is an event. They happen in the day-to-day part of a couple's life. Issues are what turn events into problems. Issues are what turn events, the day-to-day things of life, into problems. The issues are money, children, sex, in-laws, religion, politics, career, housework. And most couples only deal with the issues, money, sex, all the things you think you're fighting about. We only deal with those in the context of events. So we never solve the issues because we use up all our energy dealing with the crisis of the event. Let us give you an example from our own life. Balancing the checkbook is an event. The issue is money. But we never talk about money because it's got conflict and it's uncomfortable and all the bad things start happening when we talk about money, and then it goes into something we didn't expect. But we never talk about it on a regular basis. We wait until the checkbook's balanced. And then there's a problem. There's a crisis. The hot water heater breaks and an unexpected bill needs to be paid. We only talk about issues in the context of events, and therefore the issue never gets dealt with. When we spent time with this couple, they said to us, "What do you fight about?" And we said, "Money." And they said, "No, you don't." And we said, "Yeah, we do." And they said, "No, you don't. That's not really what you're fighting about." The reality of it is that the issue is not the root of the problem. It's something much deeper that fuels the issues that come through, and these are called hidden issues.
On your sheet, this cartoon that you have, it's not there just for something to just kind of chuckle about, but I found this cartoon to be, for me, this was so helpful. We were talking to that couple, and they said, "You don't fight about money, it's something else." And I kind of debated with them. And here's, and this is a, and this, so the words that are on this cartoon are important. And this is what I learned in talking with them. And they said is that this whole thing about money, it really is something much deeper. And they got us to talking and listening to one another. And what I discovered and what I learned is that for each one of us, for men and women, the way God has made us, there are some deep issues that are just at the root of who you are, of who your wife is. Those things that are just the things that they will go to the mat for, things that are just kind of like in their DNA.
And they're formed in the deep places of your life. They're formed partly by the family of origin that you come from, life experiences that you've had. They're very deep within you, and they're part of who you are as a person. And nothing you can do will change that about the other person. Yeah.
In this book that you'll hear that we reference, and that's so
helpful.
You
have it in your notes, this book.
There are six things that are deep within each of us, deep reservoirs, if you want to call them that, that really is the root of where those things come out. Think of this. Every one of us, I think, have at least one old faithful in our marriage. Something that, you know what, on a periodic basis, man, it just blows. And something's going to, and it just erupts. You know, what is that old faithful in your marriage? What is that old faithful? It might be one of these areas across the top, but if you really take the time to listen to one another and to talk and to explore with one of these six things, what might be in there? Because what I learned is we talked about money and tried to find out what this was. What Elizabeth helped me see was, you know what, for me, it's not about money. For me, it's an integrity issue. That's what the money thing is. It's about integrity, meaning, you know what, I want these bills paid because, you know what, I feel like it's an obligation and our name is on it, and if we don't pay this, I feel like I've let somebody down because this is, I said we would meet this obligation and da-da-da. It's an integrity issue. So when she started to understand, it wasn't about money, it was something really deep within me, and it was about my integrity. And it changed and flipped the whole conversation that we weren't just fighting about dollars and cents, but because she loves me and I love her, we've taken some time to start to realize, what is it that makes us tick? What is that thing that is so fundamental to who we are? Do you know what that is for your wife? You know what that core
She probably
issue
doesn't
is?
Know what it is either.
Yeah.
This is a process of discovery. Let us tell you what those basic hidden issues are. The first one is control. These are on your sheet. The first one is control, and it has to do with status and power and who decides. A question to kind of help you remember that is, who's in charge? And somebody that fights against control wants to know that there's an equality of input. She wants to know that you hear her and y'all make decisions together, not that you are in charge. Caring. The question there is, am I loved? The extent to which you feel loved and cared for by your partner. Recognition. Feeling valued by your partner, not just for what you do, but for who you are. And the question that goes with that one would be, am I seen? Am I seen? Does he even see? Does she even see? Not just what I do, but who I am. Commitment. Concerns about the extent that you're going to be together no matter what. The long-term security of your relationship. The question is, are you going to stay with me? Mike comes from a heritage of divorce, and my parents have been married for 53 years. And we were in San Antonio walking down a hill with two little boys and two strollers. We were talking about a difficult subject. I don't remember what it was. And I just popped off and said, you know, so-and-so said they got help from a counselor for how to deal with conflict. And I kept walking and talking and not realizing he wasn't right there. And when I turned around, he was sitting on a planter behind me crying. And I said, wait, what? What is going on here? And he said, you want a divorce? I said, no, I don't. The thought never crossed my mind. But it went right directly to his issue with commitment. We all have more than one, but we have main ones. But commitment, the long-term security of your relationship, integrity, when you think your partner is questioning your motives, values, and standards. When it came to money, he felt like I was questioning his motives. I thought he wanted to control me. He wanted to care for me. Can you see the problem there? Integrity. And the last one, we accidentally left it off your handout, but it's super important. So acceptance is the last one. This reflects the deep need we have to be respected, connected, safe, and accepted by our spouse. This is my number one hidden issue. The need we have to be respected, connected, safe, and accepted by our spouse.
Some might say, well, there are no hidden issues in my marriage. My wife and I, we talk about everything. We know each other cover to cover. And if we are just fine, so this really isn't.
And we don't fight. That would be another one you would hear. We don't fight.
This doesn't apply for us. And I said, okay, great, but let me ask you a couple questions. And here's four signs that I would suggest maybe there is some hidden issues that are worth exploring. And please know these hidden issues. This is not about fixing them. It is about knowing what they are and understanding them in there. And so here, maybe this goes on, wheel spinning, you know, where things come up and say, oh, gosh, here we go again. So, you know, I just know it's. You know, it's this issue. It's coming up again, as always. Maybe it's the trivial things. Oh, my gosh, all I did was ask what's for dinner tonight, and it's turned into World War III, and she's gone off on some whole tangent about this or that. You know, so are the trivial things becoming major? Are there certain things, whenever you just bring them up, whoosh, walls go up. There's this avoidance that I just mention a certain word and woof, they up comes wall and they're not going to crack. They're not going to talk about it. They just shut down. You know, is there avoidance going on? And then the last thing that can suggest there's hidden issues, if there's scorekeeping on. If you are keeping score and knowing when was the last time my partner took advantage of me and they won the battle, and you're keeping score. If you have these things going on, then I would suggest there's some hidden issues that are behind those things that are worth exploring. And know this, you can do this, you and your wife. You don't need to go pay somebody to do it for you or to help you discover this or that. It is talking. It is listening. It is almost kind of helping each other discover those kinds of things. And it takes time. What? Oh, go ahead.
When dealing with hidden issues, sorry, we're trying to be respectful of your time, but there's things that have to be done here.
Okay.
When dealing with hidden issues, it's really, really important. And are you listening, guys? It's very important to focus less on problem solving. Write that down in bold letters on the top of your page. I don't know a man alive, including the four that extra ones that live in my house, that doesn't immediately default to problem solving. It is not about problem solving. It is about hearing each other's thoughts and feelings. We often don't solve hidden issues. You won't. You can't. They're part of someone's DNA. That's a geyser that you see in this picture. Old Faithful goes off every hour. And in the hour between the explosion, all kinds of tectonic, I think that's what it's called, activity is happening. Hidden issues are in the deepest parts, and they won't be solved, but they will be soothed through mutual understanding, respect, and acceptance. They are not things to be solved. Very important.
I know this doesn't make sense to us guys about, what do you mean you don't want to solve? They want it soothed, and it makes, trust me, it makes a difference of just to soothe and to listen.
We have a technique we're going to teach you. It's called the speaker-listener technique.
This will feel awkward. It might look artificial. It might think, I could never do that. But I want to tell you, try this. You'll have some fun with it. And if you got your blue sheet, here's the way it works. And this is a way to start to do something different in your communication. And they call the speaker-listener technique. And you see there's some rules. I would tell you this, the rules matter. And you know what the rules are important for is one of the reasons men oftentimes avoid communication with their wife on this is because we never know where it might go. You bring up the subject, and next thing you're taking down a path, and it's like, man, how did we get there? I just wanted to talk about this. Well, you know, when you have some rules, that puts some boundaries. And as guys, we typically like having some rules on how to do these things. So this would be a way to start to explore and to talk about some of the things. And are we going to do it now?
Yeah. Rules, it's important to remember rules don't define what's great about the game. They just make it possible for two teams to engage in it. If there were no referees for tomorrow night's game, it would be a disaster. The rules are to help you keep the disasters from happening in your conversation. And I'm going to tell you what they are. The first rule, first of all, you have to have something that says who has the floor. In the spirit of Valentine's Day, I brought you this cute little pillow that says, be my Valentine. There's also another purpose to it. It's soft. Just in case you have a bad fight about who has the floor. Yeah.
You want the floor here. You take the floor.
Yeah, hammer, awesome. Not a good idea. Go for something soft. Rules for both of you. The speaker has the floor. This indicates who the speaker is and who has the floor. Share the floor. One person does not get to do all of the talking. Okay, guys, here it is again. No problem solving. This is that part in the beginning about rushing in haste to get things done and you never deal with the real issues. No problem solving. The rules for the speaker. Speak for yourself. Don't mind read. Things like, I think you think. No. Speak for yourself. Don't go on and on. A lot of details are not necessary. Stop and let the listener paraphrase. One of the reasons this is important is because think about the way you carry on conversations. If you're anything like me, you're thinking of what you're going to say next more than you are listening to what the person is saying. This all feels really artificial and unnatural and awkward. And the reason it does is because we have lost the ability to listen. We were never good at it to begin with, and technology has made it even worse. You can't talk on the phone and drive a car and really listen to somebody. You can't text and have a conversation and really listen. But if you know you're going to have to paraphrase what they just said, you will pay better attention. So paraphrase what you hear. Oh, that was for the stop and let the speaker paraphrase. Okay, this is for the listener. Speaker, stop and let the listener paraphrase. This is for the listener. Paraphrase what you hear. Be prepared to say it back. And, ooh, this is a tough one, don't rebut. You are not allowed to rebut unless you have the thing, floor, whatever the thing is. Don't rebut. Focus on the speaker's message. And now, to the best of our ability, we're going to demonstrate this for you.
We never know how this is going to go. Third time.
Here we go. Maybe we'll get it right this time.
And it's a real story. We tried to pick what was the thing that we want to talk, so this is a real deal.
And we had to call a timeout on it last night, just so you know. Michael.
Yes, dear.
Yeah. Do you have a minute to talk? I need to talk to you about something.
Yeah, this is fine.
I know that you got a phone call from the... I was told I'm not being heard in the back. I know you got a phone call from the arena football team, the Milwaukee Mustangs, and they want you to be their volunteer chaplain again.
Yep.
And I'm really, really concerned about how you're going to fit that into your schedule.
So you've got a concern that I'm going to do the chaplain thing again last year? That's what I hear you saying.
Yeah, I'm concerned about it. All right. And I'm concerned about it because I know your schedule is already full, and there's demands on your time, and I'm afraid that if you do all the things they need you to do, you won't get the things done that need to be done at home.
I hear somebody snickering out there. I don't know why. So you've got a concern that I've already got a full plate of things going on, and if I take this on, I really won't be able to take care of the things that responsibilities I have here at the house.
That's correct.
Okay.
Would you like the floor?
Yeah, please.
There you go.
I want you to know, I am aware that you, I thought you would probably have, did I go out of line?
No, you're good.
I'm aware that you would, that you'll have a concern with this, but I want you to know is that I've looked at my schedule, I think it'll fit, and all that being said, I'd want you to know, is, you know what, one of the reasons I want to do it is it's fun, I just like it, and it'll be an opportunity for me to take the boys, and we can go to some games as well, but more, it's just, I think it'll work, and I'll have some fun.
So I hear you saying you think you can handle this, based on looking at your schedule,
yep.
Knowing what's coming,
yep.
And you really want to do it because it's fun and you enjoy it.
Yeah, that's right.
Now's the part you forgot earlier.
This is what I forgot
yeah,
last time,
go ahead.
Too?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Still don't have it right. is there anything that I could do that would help you with some of your fears? Because, you know, I'll tell you I want to do this and why I want to do it, but the truth of it, and I'm going to try to make sure it doesn't get in the way, but the truth of it is there's a good chance that I'm going to probably mess up sometimes, and it's going to get in the way sometimes. Is there anything that would maybe help you not get so upset about it?
May I have the floor?
Yes, you may. Yeah.
What I hear you say is you're aware of my concerns, but at the same time, you just really want to do this because it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And you're willing to help me not be so concerned about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am willing. Yeah, that's right.
You're supposed to paraphrase, not agree.
Well, you work at this, you practice with it.
Paraphrase, hurry. We're running out of time. You're supposed to paraphrase what I say.
I was thinking my answer there. Yes, dear. I don't know.
See?
This won't make the last tape. You won't hear this on this tape.
You're willing to do... I said I don't know what we said.
So what did you say? I don't know what we said.
I'm lost. Okay. What I hear you say is that you're willing to do some things to help me not be so afraid, but you really want to do this. And I really want you to do it and have a lot of fun doing it, but I need you to warn me if you can. Don't just surprise me with, tonight I'm going to be gone for 8 hours.
Yeah, you're saying just give you some warning and it'll give you a heads up on it, and don't surprise you with it. Oh, got to go.
Okay, good. Okay. So, ta-da.
Yeah, whatever.
But wait, what you need to understand there is the problem wasn't solved. Okay, I'm still afraid that he's going to ignore me for the Milwaukee Mustangs arena football team. But he heard my fear and said, I'll do what I can. It could have been, hey, guess what? The arena football team called. They want me to be the chaplain. And I could have stomped my feet secretly and gone out of the room fuming. Okay, here we go again. Which is what might have happened under other circumstances.
Or typically I would take the path of, you know what? I'm just going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to roll the dice because I don't think she'll know because I can squeeze it in with what I normally do. And you know what? It's worth the risk. I'm going to just go for it, and I'll just deal with it down the road.
Do you see? What when someone speaks their part and the other person only listens, and then out of respect is given a turn to speak their part. It takes a ton of practice. Clearly, this is the third time we've done it today, and we still can't get the conversation right. But it's the beginning. The hidden issue is my desire to be respected, accepted, those things. His is his integrity. Yeah. They show up.
And in talking through that, one of the things that I learned just when we practiced and talked about this is there is the truth that partly I just want to, it's a fun thing. I didn't realize part of my motivation is I just enjoy getting to do that and hang with these big giant guys and
Arena. I thought you were talking about enjoying this type of conversation. I was going to say, that is not what you said last night.
Guys, okay. let me just wrap up because I'm running out of time. This blue sheet, you're going to get home. Your wife said, so what'd you learn? What happened to that communication thing? This blue sheet, this is for you to sit down with your wife and to say, well, let me hear some of my notes. Here's some things. And this is a bit of a worksheet in here. Those three questions and the primal truth, you know, that whole part of that. Don't just memorize those verses. But if you really have your attitude right, these questions here, these are magic questions. If you could ask your wife these questions on a daily basis, things will happen in a different way. But you got to have that attitude right and really have it square there. You can see the part about drawing the piece of pie. You draw it, she draws it. You might be surprised at what you learn. Just, it's a talking paper here. And then you got the cheat sheet on the back. But this is really more of a worksheet for you and your wife just to discuss and have a conversation. And that's good enough just to have a conversation about it.
You know, we know your spouse should be the single most important person you have in your life. And like it or not, communication is the tool God has given us to knit our hearts and minds together. Success is possible if we're willing to apply some intentional principles. Remember in the beginning, all couples have a problem. Those who do best work together as a team. Intentional principles. We've all been called to God-honoring communication. So step forward in humility and watch Him transform you. Mike's going to close in prayer.
Yeah. God, thanks for this time, and I just pray, Lord, for each man that he will do one thing different in his communication today with his wife when he goes home, and we'll just take a chance. And so, Lord, I just thank you for this day, and I pray for your blessing for each guy here. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Thanks, God.